This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this show is Cues of the Force. That Q stands for questions. I said that really triumphantly, like somebody is pushing back against questions, and the Q is like, no, I will stand up for questions. We've got some great ones. Excited to talk about them. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
You had some old-timey stage gravitas in that. Questions. Almost with a twirling mustache, but on the light side.
Yeah, a light side mustache. How are you, Ken?
I am great. We got some big questions today. I took some good notes on and then lost my Google Drive doc for a day. I couldn't find it. And I thought, oh, I have to do the notes again. And I found them. The force found the notes. So we're good to go.
Google Drive, would you say, is Google Drive on the light or the dark side of the force?
It needs to stay on the light because literally everything I do is run off of it. I'm one of those folks. So if it goes down, my whole career stops.
I think sometimes Google Drive, unlike, you know, like Luke on Octo, who chooses to disconnect from the force, every once in a while, Google Drive chooses to disconnect from the force user.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Google Drive, but who knows? Maybe we will. We want to start by letting you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, or indeed anything that plays stuff, I bet. This week, we are recommending The Princess and the Scoundrel by Beth Revis. By the time this episode drops, this book will be out in the world. Ken and I have both started this book and have really, really enjoyed it. Can't wait to finish. Can't wait to discuss. If you would like to give it a listen, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Ken, have you been continuing to read The Princess and the Scoundrel?
No, because I'm bad at homework. Love it. I am about 100 pages in, and as I've said before, it's already got some of my favorite Star Wars writing in it. And I mean of all time, going back to my youth. Like, I really, there's some stuff I love in it. But then I knew you and I were going to be covering this a little bit later, so I was like, oh, I don't have to finish this for a little bit. I'm gonna put my homework aside. And I'm horrible at that. I'm horrible at that. I got to get better.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. That first 100 pages, I was like, this was some pinch me stuff of like, am I reading this? Do I get to read this? And is it this good? Absolutely amazing. And then without any spoilers, there's kind of a transition in the book around page 100. And I'd gobbled the book up to that point, and then I got busy. And I was really like, I want to give this my full focus. So I've had to set it aside, and I'm looking forward to picking it back up.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we could talk about The Princess and the Scoundrel all day, even though we haven't finished reading it. Look forward to that book discussion. For now, we are going to get to your questions. As always, we have two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We have a lot of great questions, some big ones, some intense ones, some heavy ones, some important ones. And that's what we have this week, pretty much. I was going to say, and some fun ones. These are fun, too. But these are all weighty questions, and sometimes that's just the way it works out. So let's dive in. First, we go to Twitter, and this comes to us from Ray Hernandez. Ray says, hi, do you think with time, the right teacher, and most importantly, an openness to learn, could any living, sentient being in the galaxy far, far away learn to wield the Force like the Jedi and Sith? Or is it really a hard-coded yes-no for Force powers just based on genetics? Mm. This is a complex question, I think. And we have gotten other questions in the long-ago past and recently as well. I think this is such a complex question. I think kind of a sensitive one, because I think it dives into what is Star Wars about? What does Star Wars mean? What is being communicated? What do we kind of take from the story into our own lives? So, as we dive in, I want to acknowledge how complex it is, and I definitely want to give a big caveat that I will be giving my thoughts, and that's all they are, my thoughts. I don't think my answer is definitive. These are my thoughts, because I know this is one that people feel really strongly about, and it can become really personal. So with those simple caveats in mind, Ken, where do you start with this question?
I am spitting straight facts here. All right. I'll counter that. And I'm actually quoting George, and his word is always golden, unless he changes his own words, depending on the time or, decades, which you find it. This is big, and it's big overall because, the idea that we all should have this chance, right? Like, it's a great thought, and I think there's some truth to that. I think there's some truth in, Force being everywhere and binding us and this and that. And I always go to, I know I've said it before, but Jan Dodonna saying, may the Force be with you. I just grew up as a kid thinking everyone knows it. Everyone can touch it. Just some people are better at it. And that does lead me to that. Actually, it's funny. I actually tried to look up the exact quote again. It's the George Lucas basketball player quote that I talked about before. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find I think it's in a Star Wars Archives book. I just tried to Google search it. George at one point had said, we all can learn to play basketball. Just some people are going to be naturally better than it. And that's not necessarily even the best answer, but it's one that does kind of make sense to me as a starting point. Mm. But I got a new iPad recently, and there was an app that popped up, like learn to play piano, get this app. And I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool. Then in my head, I was like, I am not Luke Skywalker of the piano. So I don't know. So it stops myself, and maybe that's what this is about. So I don't know. That's where I start. That's the overall start. I'll kick it back to you first of all, David. The basketball thing, that does kind of make sense, though, overall for Star Wars. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, there is a part of this conversation that is the natural ability and training, right? Lucas emphasizes training again and again. There's that story that Lucas allegedly said to Filoni, like, hey, good job with the Grogu kid. He's got to train. I think in Lucas's mind, it does seem to be something that different people are more naturally adept at. But a big part of it is, how seriously do you take it? How much do you work on these skills that, like, fate, destiny, biology, whatever, has opened the door to you being amazing at this? And now do you go through the door and do the work? I think it's a great way to look at it. I did look up some George Lucas stuff. Okay. And I just decided to pull this chunk of Wikipedia. I was actually just looking up the midichlorians, right? Because that's that can kind of get to this, right? Are the midichlorians, like Ray is asking in their question, are the midichlorians just like, it is a blood sample thing. You can sample it. You can count the midichlorians. And based on how many you have, that's how adept you are at using the Force. And like, Anakin breaks the record with over 20,000, and Han Solo has a half of one midichlorian, and that's it. Conversation over, right?
Yeah.
Are the midichlorians hard science dictating ability, or are they the character's attempt to kind of quantify the spiritual so it can be better understood and discussed? All that. That's what I was curious in. But then I found all this Lucas stuff. Yeah. So it starts with a quote, and this is the Wikipedia article on midichlorians. It is said that certain creatures are born with a higher awareness of the Force than humans. Their brains are different. They have more midichlorians in their cells. That is a note that it says was retroactively added by George Lucas to guidelines for the expanded universe. So that's something that Lucas said at one point, and that's just the quote to start off this section. Here's kind of a summary of the things that Lucas has said over the years. Again, reading straight from Wikipedia, and you can look at the sources yourself and decide whether you trust the veracity of Wikipedia. Lucasfilm maintains that midichlorians were first conceived by George Lucas as early as 1977. However, there is no evidence of this before the publication of The Making of Star Wars in 2007. The book's author, Jonathan W. Rinzler, said that Lucas added the passage about the midichlorians in the run-up to the book's publication. Lucas incorporated the explanation of midichlorians into the film as part of Anakin Skywalker's journey towards understanding the Force. When discussing the story treatment for 1983's Return of the Jedi in 1981, and in particular the backstory for Anakin, Lucas implied that the precepts of being a Jedi could be practiced by anyone, when comparing it to yoga or karate. So not your basketball quote, but very, very similar. Then it goes on to say, as recorded in Star Wars, The Making of Episode One, The Phantom Menace, the midichlorians were incorporated into the film story in the second screenplay draft, finished around 1995. In an interview given to Paul Duncan, author of the Star Wars Archives book, Lucas confirmed that, quote, everyone has the Force, unquote, since every single living organism has midichlorians inside their cells. The only difference between Jedi are that the Jedi are trained. So is with many Lucas things, I feel like it has it fluctuates, right? He's talking about it in a couple different ways over time. He's talking about it as, yep, some beings are born more adept. But yes, the Force touches everyone and training is really important.
So just insert basketball in there, and I'm right. And knowing me, I might have. I'm so bad with quotes. If anyone watched me compete in trivia contests, it could have been yoga. Now I just think basketball, and that's not even my favorite sport. Anyways, I love all this stuff, though. I don't want to cut you off. If you want to follow more on the Lucas stuff there, that's just
no. I wanted to kind of put that out there that Lucas has like some direct quotes, like telling Paul Duncan everyone has the Force, but then Lucas obviously has some direct quotes and some storytelling that does make it seem that like your connection to the Force is at least partially biological, you know, at least the potential that you might have is at least biological. So I feel like there is a little, not even contradiction, but a lot of possibility in the quotes that he's given.
I love that word possibility, and looking at Ray's question and what they've written us here, this idea of wielding, like I put in quotes, wielding the Force, that sometimes makes me think of, you know, we'll make the video game, press an X and you do a Force power. And I'm not necessarily saying Ray was intending it just for that, but I started there. So because of that, I think it's truly possible based on like what George is saying, like, yeah, it's there. It's all around us. It binds us and you all have it. You're all aware. You might be aware of it. Maybe you're Laura Santeca who worships and studies under ideas of the Force, but doesn't use it. Maz Kanata talks about that, you know, and then of course, even going to Rogue One with Baze and Chirrut, and another way to look at it. So it's there. And then it got to be thinking of just like beyond, you know, clearly there's those with maybe more natural affinity for it, but to get there on any level, you have to just be open and learn about not just it, but about yourself, right? So much of what the lesson, I think I see in certain, particularly Clone Wars, the Yoda one comes up, right? Even Yoda going, I've done this before. I'm Yoda. Ooh, I had to learn a little something about my hubris, my dark side. I had to face that. So I love this idea that perhaps as these types of students learn more about themselves, then they can learn more about how to use the Force and not just sense it. And can they bring down a Star Destroyer? Probably not. But hopefully no one needs to use that. But it is truly about that. Even Luke, even look what hit the last, you know, act of his life. Kylo Ren saying, Rey, you could, the act would kill you. So there's things to continue to learn, right? You're always going to be learning. You're always going to be moving and growing with the Force. Qui-Gon being the first to kind of go, oh, there's another way to, even after death. So you're always learning, but it begins with what you know about yourself. So if you can start from that point, maybe the rest won't not fall into place, but you'll start to, learn things here and there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I love that. I think the getting to know yourself through the Force, clearly the light side, it that opens you up. Right. But even the dark side that you're reaching into your own anger, right? To tap into the Force, you're reaching into something that's true. The dark side is full of lies and half truths and manipulations and all that. But that anger, right? That the fear, those emotions are real, and those are something real that you're drawing on. So I love that perspective, and I think that, like, even with your piano example, right? I think there's so much about the training of it. Of like, if you look at the piano app and go, "I can do this. I might not be the best, but I can do this." Then you might do well. If you look at it and be like, I can't do this, well, there's your answer.
Yeah. If you were to sit down and try to teach me drums, you know, you might say the same thing, but it might be about what I'm not allowing myself to be open to.
Yeah. I think I definitely wanted to lay out the Lucas stuff. I definitely wanted to get your thoughts. But I think for me, what makes this a fascinating conversation, a topic, and what I think makes it kind of personal for fans is that I feel like the morality and the philosophy of Star Wars, that everyone matters, that we are all connected, that the Force runs through all things, that it is inside everyone, between everything, that philosophy, that mood, that energy makes me feel like, well, yes, of course everybody could use the Force. Yeah, of course. If Han was able to get past his grump and his doubt and his cynicism, you know, maybe he wouldn't be throwing rocks. Yeah, but maybe he could just flick the switch of the Millennium Falcon. Or maybe he could be like, I can't control it, but I feel it now. You know, now I know that instinct in my gut sometimes is the larger galaxy speaking to me. I feel like the philosophy of Star Wars makes me want to go, yes. But when I look at the actual text, the storytelling from the films, the books, the comics, for me, the evidence is that some beings are, yes, more connected to the Force than others, that they are born with natural potential. And like you said, then we have characters like Maz Kanata or Chirrut Imwe who can feel it and maybe touch it just a little bit. Or like in the Catalyst novel, Lyra Urso kind of describes herself as just like Force aware. I cannot control it at all, but I can feel the shifts in moods and energy, and I'm aware of it almost like an aura across the galaxy. You know, then we have people who are intensely connected, like Yoda and the Skywalkers, and in the High Republic, we even learn that some Jedi are like, I can kind of fly, in or Imri, like I have this specific gift. I can affect people's emotions, but there's this other thing stuff I can't do. You know, I think there's lots of evidence in the text that some beings are, no matter how much they trained, they would not ever reach the level of a Jedi.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Like we looked at Lucas quotes, we talked about the philosophy, but then there's actually just analyzing what's on screen, the storytelling.
Yeah, I'm trying to find why I like the why of what you're saying and try to explain it. I think there's a tendency, especially we saw this, to be a little more direct about it. We saw this coming out of Last Jedi with Rey, a hero from nowhere who plugs into a larger story. And then a lot of people did butt up against some of the stuff that goes on with Nine about, well, I guess she is tied into a bigger family and everything. And I understood that. On the flip side, you had Finn, whose story in Journey of the Force is to this point a little cut short because we don't have more yet. And maybe it emerged a little bit later, but I think it was always there. So I think I get all the sides of it. But what I love, the use of kind of what you're talking about is this great purpose. You know, learn to play piano is one thing, but also just you are connected to the greater part of the galaxy. You have a position, you have a call it a power, call it a privilege. And how do you use it? How do you answer its call? How do you fight its call? Mm. and how does it apply to your own journey? And it's a big, giant fantasy way. It is the sword in the stone. It is all those kind of things and the Campbell of it all and blah, blah, blah. But it's really personal. That's why I think for an entire generation, we always talk, Luke staring out of the twin suns was, I got to get out of Modesto too, man. And I got to find my purpose. And no matter what you do, you know, be the best ditch digger in the world, you know, like that old, do that and do it the best you can. You still, that's still a skill, a position, a power, a privilege. And what do you do with that? And I think that might tie into it. Why I personally don't mind that maybe in the galaxy, there's just some people who don't get to touch the Force. You know, that's not a, if you just focus on that, that might not be a wonderful message. Maybe, you know, I can see it. Someone going, that's a problem, because like you're saying, Star Wars is for everyone. Star Wars is about everyone mattering. The power of Jar Jar, even this character. So I think it all exists because I just think there's great purpose. That's why I'm trying to come to the why. The why of you are destined or have a choice. Destiny's given you these choices to be great. And what do you do with that greatness? And how does that greatness in Star Wars get pulled out and applied to our own lives? I'm not a Jedi Knight. I can sometimes talk into mics okay, but what do I do with that? You know what I mean?
No, I mean, we come very much to the same place at the end of the day. Like, yeah, I do get people, you know, the symbolic power of somebody who is not connected to the larger story, the way it appeared that was Rey's story in The Last Jedi, and having that be important to them, and then realizing, oh, it is still a story of this great power being passed through genetics, strange genetics when it comes to the Palpatine side of the family. I do get those concerns. And like we're talking about on the new show, like, yeah, the Skywalker saga is kind of a dynastic story. It's about the Skywalkers and the Palpatines. But in story for me, it's also like, yeah, there wasn't a line called the Kenobis that just happened to this guy from Stujon, this guy from nowhere. Right. And Mace and Vernestra and everybody you could go through, every Jedi, you know, I think if you spend time a little bit more with the broader storytelling, it's like the Skywalkers aren't, they're the exception to the rule. They're not the rule. Mm-hmm. They're the exception. So I think that's one of the reasons that it doesn't bother me as much, because I think even if the Force doesn't touch every, it does touch every single being, but if it doesn't allow them to access the abilities as much, the overall story of Star Wars is still somebody in the galaxy is just born and they have this connection, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not always dynastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you mentioned this out this last time out with the news episode, we brought it up this week, but Luke takes that shot, but he needs Han, the scrum rat from Corellia to be there. Otherwise it doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I got myself a little sidetracked. I want to go back to the great why that you were saying. I think the reason for me that I am okay with, some people are born with this really great, strong connection to the Force. Some people have a mild one. Some people, you know, can maybe kind of feel it, but they're never going to be throwing rocks. The reason that I am okay with that is the why. At the end of the day, for me, the Force is a metaphor for listening to our instincts, for valuing our connection to others, for discovering our truest selves, like you were saying. And then how do I use those instincts, those truths, to tap into my fullest abilities? You know, how do I train myself to hone those abilities? And then once I do have all of these abilities honed, how do I use them for the best good? Like, to me, that's the metaphor of the Force. And I think when I think about it that way, the Force is kind of a metaphor for a gift. And I think it doesn't bother me that people have different gifts, because I think we all do in real life, right? Mm-hmm. I think Han and Luke are both heroes, right? Rey and Rose Tico are both heroes. Rose just made this choice to get involved and used these gifts and skills that she had, you know, to contribute to the fight. What defines the characters in Star Wars is sometimes their abilities, but often it is the choice of how to use the skills, regardless of what skills they have. So whenever this conversation comes up, you know, you're talking about your skills on a microphone, you know, that maybe that's something that maybe comes to you a little bit more easily for whatever reason, whether it's biology or the way you were raised. The truth is, probably by the time you were about six, you were better on the microphone than maybe another friend, right? And then you trained and honed that. And I think for me, I see that in a positive way of we all have different skills and asking ourselves, you know, what are our Jedi skills in real life and how can they make your own life better? How can they make the communities you're a part of better? How do you benefit from the people around you having different skills than you do? Right. And when I look at it that way, I'm like, there's no problem that Han can't throw a rock. He has different skills than Luke. He has different skills than Leia, and he chooses to use them for good. And that is ultimately, to me, a beautiful picture, not a picture where Han is losing out on something.
Yeah, yeah. And at the risk of going straight into episode 9 again, stop me before I hurt again, Joseph. No. I acknowledge that the Finn storyline doesn't work for everybody. And then I hope it goes on. Right. I hope book, comic, otherwise we get to get more of it. Lego adventure films that we've seen some of the most post Jedi or Rise of Skywalker, Finn Force stuff. I love what it ends up representing, this feeling and this feeling that pushes you to do something. And you don't immediately know what to do with it. In fact, he runs away several times until a connection with one person leads to a connection with a bigger cause and more people. And then he's the one trying to hold everyone together. And it all begins on this feeling and we attach it to the Force. And he hasn't pulled out his own lightsaber yet and wielded and this and that. And I believe one day Finn will become a new Jedi Knight. But I love what that represents, because to me, it's the opposite of what you and I have talked about with Palpatine and this little detail of he'll track you down. If you fudge a form, he wants you on the bad side because, you know, you have a crack in your morality. It's the opposite of that. And that's why I think it's still, you know, maybe I'm too far off the path of Ray's question here. This is a wonderful question of you can learn to wield it. You can learn skills, but it all begins with that feeling. And that feeling in Star Wars is attached to this, call it a greater good, but whatever you want to use that and apply to your own life, morality, spirit, whatever, God, doesn't matter to me. But it's those choices you make every day, the big questions in Star Wars. So that's why, truly, once again, everyone's journey has value to me in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really, really agree with that. And I think Ray's question is great, and it can be looked at as a question of just like, how do you interpret the storytelling of Star Wars? Are, like Ray says, just Ray, the question asker, is it hard-coded yes or no for Force powers just based on genetics? And I think it's really important to talk about it as a analysis, interpretation of the storytelling text of Star Wars. But the reason the question matters is, what does that mean to how we interpret Star Wars and how we, is it a good lesson? Do we give it value? And I think everything that you're saying about Finn, it is one of those things that makes me feel like, yeah, the story is everyone has different gifts. Even within the Force, everyone maybe has different abilities. And that's the thing that makes it beautiful to me, is everybody making the choice to use whatever skills they have to be their truest selves, to help others, to be a part of the community, and to reach out for help when somebody else has a skill that they don't, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah. And all of it pointing toward this true north of empathy and compassion and all the things that Star Wars preaches in there. That's how you measure whether I think you're using that skill right. Because there's sometimes you get some feelings that aren't the ones you need to follow. And I think that's built into those lessons there for me as well.
Yeah. And I think for me, a lot of the big climactic moments of Star Wars, Return of the Jedi and Rise of Skywalker in particular, are like, yes, the big title Skywalker Force user has the potential to make a big difference because of their power. But also, it's always a team win, right? You know, Rey's blocking that lightning. So everybody else who made a brave, strong choice with the skills that they have can make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And as far as, you know, hard-coded yes or no, again, I don't think this is specifically what Rey is asking, but it's like if you look at the Force like that, if you look at it as a level up or a power up, we can use a video game analogy again and again and again. But if that's the way you see it, maybe you stop at that door. I can understand, too, where you're like, well, it is yes, or it is, you know, and that's the only thing you got, because you either know how to move those rocks or you don't, where I think the Force is bigger than that. I really think it's always been bigger than that. And that's what Jan Dodonna says, may the Force be with us, because we're all out there. You're all flying these X-Wings or Y-Wings because you're connected to the greater good. You're making a great cause, and that's something the light side of the Force wants you to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe after this conversation, maybe after reading the Lucas quotes, maybe my official answer will be like, yes, absolutely. The Force touches everyone, but people experience it in different ways. And one of the big ways to experience it is this sort of full interaction of being a Jedi and a Sith. But that doesn't mean that other people don't interact with it in lots of different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ray, for the very thoughtful and intriguing question. We're going to go now to Matt. Matt says, at the end of episode 4 of Kenobi, Leia and Obi-Wan have an emotional holding of hands after both experienced a tough series of events. Who in that moment do you think needed the hand holding more? It's just a straight up hand holding battle. Who needs the release more, Ken?
Look, tough series of events is me not having enough spinach at my Subway sandwich order and then the drink prices being up. That's a series of events. Yeah, they go through a lot. This is a great question, Matt. Watch the end of this episode again and try to break it down. I think the cheat answer is both do, right? I think it's that. But I tried to like almost again go to my sports loving side. I almost went to like the late great John Madden on a telestrator screen. I was like, boom, let me stop you here. And let me break down the play. I think Leia feels the need for comfort herself. I think that's what's going on. She's just been through this horrific thing and been rescued, which is kind of crazy. A lot of, not a normal day for old Leia. And she, I think the whole scene to me kind of, I interpret it as starting, I'm scared. I need comfort. And she looks out, and the focus and the camera and the shot is her looking out at seeing other people. Tala and Sully are the ones right in front of her. They need comfort as well. Then that causes her to sense that Kenobi needs comfort, and then she provides it. But in doing so, she gets the comfort she needs back. Right then, the hand touches is returned. So drawing strength from the empathy she's giving Kenobi, and then from that, the connection that has been formed now then drives her forward. So I think that's why that all leads to both of them need it. And dare I say, Kenobi would appreciate it. It's a symbiotic circle. You must see
a handhold is a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. I think that is the correct answer. Hey, say, you can tell me this, Ken. Sometimes even in sports, there's a tie, right?
Sometimes it depends. Yeah. So then we'll go to a shootout. It's a shootout between Leia and Kenobi's empathy here.
Has there ever been a boxing match where the two opponents did knock each other out at the exact same moment with two punches?
To my knowledge in boxing, I don't know. I hope so now. Maybe as a fun pro wrestling spot might have happened, but boxing, I don't know.
I feel like it would be famous if it had happened just naturally and organically. I'm joking a little bit because I really do feel like my true answer is that they both needed it equally. They had both been through trauma. They were both, I think, finding their footing. Leia on her first journey into the galaxy that she already had studied so much and knew so much about, but now she was experiencing it. Just earlier she had been like, the Empire does try to help, though, and turns out, nope, here is a secret torture facility that you get to be in, young child. Here's the trauma that all these other families are going through. Obi-Wan taking this first step out in a long time, discovering that Anakin is still alive and absolutely hates him. And the absolute fear, the deep, deep fear of failing Leia, I think they're both in trauma and they both are people who naturally value the strength that comes from connection, right? Yeah. I think what is powerful about the scene is what you were saying, Ken. Leia has the intuition and the courage to initiate it, right? It is a young leader moment for Leia. She is looking around and she is seeing what everybody is going through. She is sensitive to it. She is including herself, right? And then trying to give the team what they need, but in particular Kenobi, right? To see that he's in so much pain and to reach out is both her saying, I see you're in pain, but her also saying, and it would help me if you held my hand. I also just think there's a dynamic where Obi-Wan comes to her rescue. On Dio, they have their conflict, right? Where she's not sure whether to trust him. And so there's a little bit of like, there's a little bit of like in adult and child sort of dynamic in this moment for me too, where like, I have had interactions where a parent has like told a child to greet me and hug me. And I'm always like, no, only if you want. This is a child choice for me. And apologies if I'm wandering into a complex parenting issue. I'm talking about my own life experience. Like, Obi-Wan is there for Leia. That's his whole thing, right? He wants to be there for Leia. But Leia's had a kind of like, I'm not sure about you. Okay, I am kind of sure about you. Okay, I'm not sure about you. And it's really her saying,
right,
I see you want to be here for me, and I want that too. This is my agency to initiate this, right? You would probably offer this to me, but you're not entirely sure if I want it. And I am telling you, yes, I do want this moment of connection, you know, in this way.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and it all runs pretty true for Leia as a character, building back to some of the stuff that built the character New Hope and beyond. But that's why I think it's a beautiful building block for that character too.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great, great moment in the show. Any final thoughts before we take a quick break?
No, worth a rewatch too. Thanks for the question, Matt. Not just that episode, but that moment. You know, I'm joking about breaking it down like sports footage, but yeah, it's just very clear. It's a lot of what's being communicated, right? Is her face looking out and seeing who else needs help. And that's such a Leia thing. And I love it.
Yeah. Leia saves the day with a nice, kind handhold. Very, very awesome. We are going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with two more questions from our patrons on Patreon back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back to continue attempting to A the Q's of the Force. We'll see if we do a good job with our A's. We're going to our patrons on Patreon, and first up, Lightspeed Bear, which is a phenomenal username. Here we go. Here's what Lightspeed Bear has to say. Hey, Force Center, first time writing in. I always try and stay positive and have been a big fan of almost all of Disney Star Wars to date, but I was wondering your thoughts on something that's been bugging me for a while. I, like a lot of people, adore The Mandalorian, but why is it that the dialogue on the show and the Book of Boba Fett is often so stiff to the point of being a distraction? It reminds me of the famous Harrison Ford line from the original trilogy, George, you can write this bleep, but you can't say it. Going beyond the spoken words themselves, a lot of the side characters seem wooden and lacking in much personality, Fennec a prime example. There are exceptions, of course, Pelly, Mayfeld, but on the whole, I'm having a tough time relating to characters in the Mandoverse, a stark contrast to Kenobi, where I found the side characters felt much more real and expressive. Am I alone in thinking this? And more importantly, do you think there's a reason for it? Is it a Favreau-Filoni thing? Again, I don't mean to put a downer on things, but just something that's been on my mind. Keep up the great work. I thought your panel with Star Wars Explained at Celebration was great fun, so thank you for that. Thank you, Lightspeed Bear, for the question and for coming to us with something you're wrestling with, which we are totally okay with. We're always happy to dive into strong opinions. I think we always try to talk about them as opinions. You know, for Lightspeed Bear, Fennec Shand is coming off as wooden, and that's valid because that's his reaction to the show. But Fennec might not come off as wooden to other viewers. Happy always to discuss it, but we also want to make sure that we're trying to discuss it that clearly as opinions and as different points of view, unless something is a hard fact that can be looked up and verified. All right, Ken?
No. I'm spitting once again hard facts. I 100% agree. 100% agree. Across many films and shows in Star Wars, it can change for me even.
Yeah, right. All right, so let's get into this, though. I think that Lightspeed Bear does bring up something that I think I've heard fans express, that there is a certain, there's a distinctive style to The Mandalorian and to the Book of Boba Fett, and why the dialogue and some of the characterizations are this sort of a blunt minimalism. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that when you watch the shows? Do you think it exists? And why? And if so, what do you make of it?
I 100% think it exists, and to Lightspeed Bear, I hear you, and I actually agree with you in a lot of ways. And it's just such a Star Wars thing. You know, there you go. There's my very specific thought. It's a Star Wars thing. Star Wars just kind of remains honest to itself, right? And what it's trying to do, and this goes to original trilogy, you know, which if you go back and watch, it wasn't as smooth as I thought it was as a kid. And there you go. You got Harrison's comments on that. Famously, we got the prequels come along with a different style. And then George at several points has tried to say, well, no, it's somewhat intentional. And I've even heard jokes about, sure, George, you're trying to cover up some stuff. But you watch the prequels, it stays true to itself. And I think more than maybe some of the other Star Wars creators right now, Favreau and Filoni, but Favreau are trying to stay true to that in some ways. I haven't heard a specific quote. I didn't look it up from Favreau himself. And so I rub up against it sometimes, even myself, even have what I think is an understanding of this. I don't know. It's a mythic feel. It's a Western. It's a fairy tale. It's all those kind of things that we know Star Wars to be. And it's not a straightforward presentation. You know, look, Poe Dameron says big ass door and the world falls apart, right? For a little bit of the discourse. I think through the ages, whether it's the 70s, which again, we're coming out of, you know, everyone always said French Connection, Chinatown. You got that kind of gritty realism. And then comes, you know, Star Wars with, you know, no disco soundtrack. We got an orchestra. Like, it stays true to what it wants to. Then in the prequel era, different style of movie. This is the Tarantino era. This is the Kevin Smith era. I was in film school during that time. That's all we talked about. And that's all the dialogue you wanted to write. And then you've got Phantom Menace comes along and it ain't that. It ain't that. And now you got this. And I think even sometimes 7, 8, and 9 have those moments, maybe even 7, where I wanted it to be. I just wanted it to be a little different, a little more looser, you know what I mean? But it isn't that. I think Solo and Rogue One sometimes fall in different spots. And I'm rambling at this point. But Andor, I think, is going to be completely different in a gear shift. But I still think it's going to be Star Wars. And I think that's where it starts for me. We can keep talking about it. It is a choice. And I think it's there. Part of it. Part of it is honoring the style and presentation of what came before. So therefore, I can dig it. I also want to say, I think Clone Wars has its own style at times too. It's definitely Star Wars and it's definitely Filoni doing that. But I think Clone Wars is a little more quote real and looser at times, if that makes sense. But anyway, so I guess I'm putting it all the blame on Favreau. Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think about it from the character perspective and from the style perspective. So I love everything you're saying about style. So let's go into style and then we can talk character. I think Lucas, across many different interviews, is a fan of blunt dialogue, right? I mean, Lucas is somebody who's like, exposition isn't a problem as long as it's interesting exposition. Here's one of the most famous scenes of Star Wars is the Hutt scene in A New Hope, where Obi-Wan Kenobi just explains Star Wars to Luke Skywalker for 5 minutes straight, right?
Yeah.
And that would get dinged in most modern storytelling writing for just being, you know, too much exposition, right? But Lucas is a fan of that kind of exposition, of characters saying exactly what they mean. I think because he understands how Han saying some gibberish about some parts of a spaceship that you've never heard about, I think Lucas understands why that's exciting. And I think his frustration sometimes with actors is like, it's all right there in the line. Can't you see how exciting it would be for a scoundrel to say that, oh, my clunky old ship isn't working? And he doesn't understand why an actor can't immediately understand the intent behind that bit of very direct dialogue, you know? So I think there is this legacy of Star Wars that has some blunt, stylized dialogue. And then, you know, the kind of the warmth and the humanity that some of the characters have. And I think the original trilogy is really a mix in dialogue style of very heightened, very mythic, very, you know, 1940s serial kind of straightforward. I'm just spewing weird science fiction facts with all the warmth and the humanity and the jokes that came into the original trilogy. So I feel like if you look at the original trilogy as a map, it's both kind of styles. There's a spectrum of styles in there. In The Mandalorian, I think it is very much on purpose. I think it starts with Favreau, since the idea started with Favreau. I think Filoni can absolutely do it when he wants to and when he thinks it's appropriate. I think there is a style of blunt minimalism. And I think it comes a little bit to me from, and I'm just totally spitballing. This is just opinion stuff, not secrets. I think, you know, Favreau has said that he wants The Mandalorian to be inspired by the stuff that inspired George Lucas to make Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, Cobb Vanth going, think it through, right? That's straight out of an old Western, right?
Yeah.
Mandalorian and Ahsoka, or even sometimes Luke, talking in a very distinct, blunt way. But in particular, like Mando in Ahsoka walking into town and just saying, here is exactly what I want, what I expect of you, and the exact kind of violence I will respond with if you do not do what I ask. That is just like some, like, that's samurai stuff, right? It's so in that mold of, like, the way, you know, Din talks is really in this, you know, I tell you that I am on a quest. I want this. If I do not receive this, here will be the reaction, you know? I think it's all kind of coming from a specific kind of storytelling. And for me, I think that The Mandalorian has a ton of emotion. What's going on between Din and Grogu and all of these things. And it's meant to hit this sort of sweet spot of emotional realism and mythic fantasy. So I absolutely think it's there in The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett. And I think it's a stylistic choice as well as a character choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can slide into the characters here, but it's funny. My reaction to episode 1 of Mandalorian, wasn't negative at all, but I just you clearly seen what you and I were talking about, or what is being asked here of like, okay, that is they're making some choices. They're clearly making some choices. And that's what they're going on. And then you come to Pelly. I'm an Amy Sedaris fan. I'm even off air. I was like, well, it seemed like she was in a different show to me at times. Right. And since then I've just gotten used to what they do there. Yeah. Mix Mayfeld's slightly different and definitely a Boston accent has been pointed out many, many times there, but even you got Horatio Sands at the beginning. He's doing kind of the befuddled, almost mumblecore comedy kind of vibe. Like there's a lot of different styles. So that does kind of remain distinct to the individual characters. And so the ones that might still speak in those kind of rigid ways, a little bit more of that rigid cadence, it does come off even more intentional. The Boba Fett. I mean, that just kind of tracks for Boba Fett. Fennec Shand. But anyways, yeah, I'm spitballing too. But I'm taking myself back to 2019 going, I don't know how much I like that. And I think I came around on it, and it's just because, you know, you see it and you live with it every week. And I think because Din is so good, I think it's a well use of the style for Din.
Yeah, yeah. So, stylistically, yeah, I think it's within the spectrum of Star Wars for sure. But then when I really look at it, and thanks to Lightspeed Bear for taking me down this path to really look at this, I think part of it is that a lot of these characters are not expressive. That's who they are. Din Djarin isn't somebody who's like makes jokes. Din Djarin is probably not like a big fan of going to like a birthday party, you know. You know, he probably doesn't want to shoot the bleep at the bar, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these characters were not raised to be expressive. Din Djarin was literally, to our knowledge, raised in a fundamentalist community where a lot of communication was repeating lines of dogma back and forth to one another to say, this is the way. When you're raised to speak with, we have these hardcore beliefs. We do not deviate from them. In fact, a good chunk of our conversation is a call and response where you validate that you still believe the thing that we all said we believed. And then you go out in the galaxy, you know, you're not going to be just like throwing a little bon mots over your shoulder, you know, at cocktail parties. That's who the character is. And I think like he was raised to speak that way. So he's like, I don't think Din has a ton of experience of like, how do I graciously sort of start a conversation with a stranger, BS about the weather, and then kind of drop it in that I'm on a quest to return this youngling to his... He's just direct as hell because he's raised that way. That's how you start a conversation with a transaction. What do you want? You know, what are you going to make me do to give me what I want?
I think it's a great way to look at it. It's also me trying to explain to my mom that emails don't need to begin with the dear son, you know, or a text message. Like it's different now. Yeah, no, I think that works for a lot of those characters. And again, same with Boba Fett. I think it really kind of tracked with the whoever was doing the voice, but the voice I heard in Empire, it's the same kind of like that's him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Boba was raised tight-lipped by a tight-lipped dad, right? You know, you don't need to say much. Everybody knows what you think. Don't worry. You know, your actions speak louder than words. Show people who you are. Don't talk about it. Just do what you need to do, right? For me, I think Fennec really works for me because I think she is also someone who I feel like her history, her culture, her life experiences lead her to be somebody who speaks softly, seldom talks, means exactly what she says when she says it, and it kind of, you know, speaks softly and carries several long blasters and knives that you speak with. And I think for Fennec, for me, she communicates a lot more with her eyes and her body language, right? And in it particularly in Book of Boba Fett, when her and Boba have made this bond, they have had this very sort of rigid, all right, I pledge myself to you. All right, I'm not sure about this new direction you're trying, but I pledge to support you, so I will follow you on this pledge. There's a vibe to me in her in Book of Boba Fett that she is somebody who is just opening up to the possibility of trust, right? The possibility that you can say true, relaxed human things and they might not accidentally be used as a weapon against you because you can trust the person you're with doesn't want to kill you, right?
Yeah.
That to me is Fennec's vibe.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. As you're talking, I'm trying to take myself back to that Bad Batch episode, and was there any a strong connection there? Not just there's a lot about the character that's obviously the same. I'm not talking about that, but just see how it lines up. And I think it does. And I think it tracks for these kind of characters that just, I think going to the overall, going back a little bit to that for me, it, and to Lightspeed Bear's question, again, this is all very intentional and it's all very true to itself. Mm-hmm. And not the styles of the time. And you make the, you know, Marvel is, it's modern day New York and we're all going to have shawarma and fight and we're going to talk like we do. Like, that's just what they have done. And I don't know if that's true. You know, the comics, 75 plus almost 80 years of history of comics or whatever the number will be. I'm sure the style has changed of dialogue and comics over the years to the time. Where Star Wars is kind of remain true to itself again. So yeah.
In a way, I think that's a great example of like, there is this, this wide variety in pulps, like the revolution of the Marvel comics when they came out is that the characters led real true lives. So you did have Spider-Man joking about, you know, the music he was listening to or, you know, making a pop culture joke. I have an issue of the Avengers from the 80s where they go on Dave Letterman's show. Like that's that connection to grounded and real has always been part of Marvel, but you still have characters like Dr. Doom who only refers to himself in the third person pretty much and just says, here's what Doom needs, here's what Doom will get. And you do have lengthy just sort of science fiction gobbledygook. You kind of have all of that stuff in pulp, and I feel like it's all represented in different amounts in Star Wars.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It rears its head in other spots. You know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones fan, and they have their own styles. I don't mean to take any shots across the bow, but Grace, my fiance had Witcher on the other day, and I didn't like, I literally was like, I don't like a lot of the dialogue presentation of this. It sounds too modern. It sounds too much like now versus whatever this is supposed to be. And I there's nothing about the quality of the show. I didn't watch it. She loved it. And I'm a big fan of Henry Cavill. So please, no one come at me. No one come at me. I remember thinking, I'm sitting there making food in the kitchen. I'm like, I don't like the way it doesn't sync up for me. Again, that's a very personal thing. So anyways, it's a fascinating look of how to write these big modern fantasy myths, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to acknowledge one other thing here that Lightspeed Bear brought up is that there are the different characters. So I think the overall tone of Mandalorian Book of Boba Fett, the Mandoverse, is a little bit more blunt minimalism because I think most of our lead characters are communicating with one another that way. But then the characters in the Mandoverse who are a little bit more human and flowing, like Peli and Mayfield and Greef Karga, you know, it's loud and gregarious. I think that's because it's who they are, right? They all use a flood of words to get what they want, right? Or to charm, right? Peli is usually trying to hoodwink people into buying her wares. And Mayfeld's poking everybody, right? He wants to just kind of hit you with a barrage of words to get at, you know, what's your deal? You know, make you question yourself and defend yourself. Greef Karga's like, he's a business guy. He's practically selling printing the way he's like, Mando, they all hate you. You landed the big contract. You know, like the characters, I guess for me, the point of all that is it makes it feel like this is a stylistic choice because some characters speak like this, other characters don't. And at the end of the day, it's what makes me enjoy it because it feels very purposeful. And I also understand if somebody's like, we're spending a lot of time with tight-lipped people and the overall presentation leaves me a little cold because I want that warmth. You know, I want Han and Leia bickering and bantering. And I got Boba Fett and Fennec kind of, choosing one or two words as they quietly eat dinner together. I get that stylistic difference might not be for everyone.
Look, even in season two, Bo-Katan shows up and Grace again too was like, why is she talking like that? She asked me and I had to do that. Well, it's her animated character and Katie's doing that version of, you know, so and she ended up, you know, likes the character. It's not something that's going to hold you up, but yeah, again, it's, I get it. Too. There's a pacing energy sometimes that's a little different in these shows, and I initially wasn't expecting that going back to kind of the initial parts of the conversation. So that's why I rubbed up against it a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, I really like what those shows do. But I'm excited to see what Andor's gonna do. At the time of this recording, I haven't seen the episodes. I don't know, but give every indication it's gonna be similar to Rogue One, which had its own kind of distinct style, but you know, Saw speaks the way Saw speaks for sure.
Oh yeah, the cadence Saw chooses to speak. Yeah, I'm very excited for Andor to see if it's a, you know, grounded, gritty people who know each other well, who kind of hold nothing back, that kind of thing. Will be really, really intriguing to me to see all of these different styles of dialogue. So thank you very much for the question, Lightspeed Bear. Shall we move on to our final question, Ken?
Let's do it.
All right. This comes to us from Stephen Campbell. Stephen says, hey, Force Center, thanks as always for the incredible content, keeping a wandering. Oh, you know what? I wrote down the wrong name. I'm going to read the question and then I will have the correct name. Here we go. Hey, Force Center, thanks as always for the incredible content, keeping a wandering writer, wrestler, well-fed with Star Wars thoughts and goodness during these difficult times. At the risk of getting too deep in real, what do you think about the role that Star Wars plays, has played, will continue to play as acting as a light shining on the world we live in today? Obviously, we know the original trilogy in many ways was George's response and feelings in regards to Nixon, Watergate, Vietnam, plus the prequels had some interesting parallels to Reaganism, Bushisms, etc. Obviously, art's job is to imitate life, to show us sides of ourselves in reflections of characters and scenarios and more. Of course, this leads to awesome discourse within society where people take umbrage, seeing themselves cast as villains when they believe themselves to have heroic leanings, seeing deep-seated beliefs thrown up as things to be cautious of in the galaxy far, far away, and more. So basically, the simple question is, what role should Star Wars take in shining a light on the world that surrounds us, binds us together? Is there a role? Should Star Wars stick to pew-pews and simple storytelling, or should it remain a parable for our times? To Joseph, Ken, Jennifer, and the rest of the Force Center family, may the Force be with you. Ken, what is your beginning salvo? How do you begin to answer that question?
How do we begin? I'll say this, and I say it often. Star Wars needs to show us what is possible and what could be. And that's always my starting point. It does that by sometimes digging in pretty specifically or with still a specific wide brush. I think, George, it's fascinating. There's a book out now called The History and Politics of Star Wars. This is from Chris Kempshall. And I want to shout out the Star Wars 7x7 podcast. Alex Voivod over there was listening to, Adam. I think I said Alex. Adam. Now I totally blanked on his name and I apologize because I listened. Star Wars 7x7 podcast. Alan Voivod. Fascinating stuff from the author, Chris Kempshall, who's a historian, and looking up George quotes and even some Filoni quotes and saying, you know, it's so funny. A lot of times they say, we're not doing anything specific, and it's tough to believe them. It's really tough to believe them. So fascinating starting point for me. And I'll kick it back to you before we dive any details there.
Yeah. And this question comes to us, of course, from Adam Knight, writer, wrestler, a well-fed Star Wars fan. Adam has a lot of great questions for us. Pulling back the curtain, I apologize. Sometimes I'm putting these things together fast when I'm getting ready to go to a convention and I fail to switch out the name from last week to properly attribute. So apologies, Adam, and thank you so much for this great question. Diving in here, I think Star Wars storytelling will always be inspired by our times. I think most storytelling is, even if you don't realize it, even if you're just trying to make something for fun, you're still responding to whatever culture you're telling it in. Even if you're trying to tell like the safest, cutest joke, there'll still be some element of our cultural agreement in our cultural knowledge in those jokes, right? The sound a cow makes could be, you know, the joke that what sound does a cow make, and then going bah like a goat. One could argue that is cultural, depending on what animals you are aware of and when what noise your culture assigns to the animal, right?
Yeah.
So I think Star Wars storytelling is always going to be inspired by our times, and I think the storytelling is always going to be inherently political because it's war. It's in the title, right? It's different factions with different philosophies. Even if you aren't dealing with a huge, big war, even something like Mandalorian that's taking place in a time where there isn't a large galactic conflict, right? It's still different communities in different cultures with different points of view, right? A big part of what's going on is Mando realizing that he doesn't even have the full picture of what his culture is, that there's more points of view on what it is to be a Mandalorian than he was aware of. So I think it's always going to reflect our times. I think it's always going to be political. And the question to me is, how explicit is it tied to the modern? Whether there's like literal references two things that you can go, yeah, that's pulling from right now. Mm. Or if the conflict going on between two space communities is like a socioeconomic thing that's like, yep, that exact thing is happening right now. It's an evergreen problem in cultures, but it's really flaring up or being examined or being discussed right now. That's the interesting question to me is how explicit to be, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we can make jokes about Lucas quoting, presidents in office in his movies, but also he does have the quotes of saying, you know, I don't have them in front of me, but just it is an evergreen problem. So no, I'm not doing something. It might start specifically for me or the time of the film, but I do have to work to keep it wide enough that this is going to replay time and time again, unless maybe you make some better choices. So because I think going into what kind of responsibility or what kind of, how should Star Wars, what's its role? I think because Star Wars is often about finding hope in the fears, we say light and dark times, it exists in large part to be a roadmap to get to those possibilities. So no matter what the road is, going to the evergreen kind of side of it there. So yeah, sometimes if you're really listening, you might find that you're not on the road you thought you were, at least from Star Wars point of view. And not everything is always a one-to-one comparison and situation in life. I get that. But I think Star Wars needs to keep that in mind, that even though it's of its time, it has this bigger purpose of a roadmap to hope. And how you get there is made with a lot of wonderful or tough choices.
Yeah. Roadmap to Hope is great. I wanted to pull up the specific Revenge of the Sith direct paraphrasing of the sitting U.S. president at the time. And this is kind of a great example of what we're talking about. Like all of the sort of ideas that Star Wars might reflect in the real world are things that have been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I found a Wikipedia article, and the Wikipedia article is about the sentiment, the belief, the political statement, if you're not with me, you're against me.
Yeah.
And in the Wikipedia article, it bullet points, President George W. Bush, in an address to a joint session of Congress on 20 September 2001, said, every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. And then in, of course, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, Anakin Skywalker tells Obi-Wan Kenobi that if you are not with me, then you are my enemy. 2001 to, being made in 2003, 2004, released in 2005. When I was sitting in the theater, that moment was both about what is the overall philosophical idea? What are you saying when you're saying, if you're not with me, you're against me? And also I was like, wow, Darth Vader just quoted the sitting president. So it affected me in that moment in both. It is explicit. It is contemporary, but it's also offering me to think about who wields that kind of philosophy and what do they want when they wield it? And are they right to wield it that way?
Yeah. The big why behind it, right? The big why.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of fascinated with that of like the, I think there are plenty of people who watch Revenge of the Sith and that maybe doesn't resonate with them because it hadn't been a political discussion in the real world
as
it was at that time, that exact phrase or variations thereof. In that question of like, it's political because it's about, the phrase, if you're not with me, you're against me, is a political phrase, right?
Yeah.
And that question of, does Star Wars storytelling serve itself by making more explicit connections to the contemporary or keeping it a little bit more evergreen?
Yeah, I think it's, Star Wars uniquely plays to a lot of interests, right? There's a lot of whether those interests are playing with toys, playing army. That was mine. I always talk about how, I love the rebellion versus the empire more than maybe some of the Jedi stuff. That comes from, I was given a toy gun and put out into a field and go play army with your friends. Right.
That's how
it's raised. So there was that. And then you might like the elaborate costumes. You like the cool designs for armor and ships. You might want to become a scientist because of Star Wars. But you might also be someone that's drawn to the swashbuckling adventures and fast cars like George. It's all of it. All of it matters. And no matter what brought you in and keeps you there, you can find it there. So Star Wars has to play on that. But then I just go to the roots. I mean, when I say play on that, meaning, a lot of people come to this table for a lot of different reasons. But the genesis of Star Wars was, we always talk about it, but it is both George wanting to do Flash Gordon, but not getting the rights. All right, I'll do my own. But at the same time, was going to follow up American Graffiti with Apocalypse Now. He and Kurtz You know, I mean, American Graffiti comes out of Coppola telling George, you know, don't lose this money with TH. Go write a comedy. Go write a coming of age comedy and, and do something else. And I love that there's this George decides, you know, instead of doing that, let me try to reach not just a wider audience, but different generations time and time again with this bigger sweeping tale and put all of it in there. Whether it's evergreen or whether it's specific to Nixon, as he said in exact quotes, everyone knows about the Vietnam Endor comparisons. So I think Star Wars has that responsibility to hit all of it. And you describe it a lot as attention, right? A wonderful, just attention, a wonderful, delicate ecosystem that needs all the parts to make it whole. And so therefore, it's kind of a dance to me. It's a series of very precise moves mixed with the emotions of the moment and the emotions that we're all experiencing at the time. Look at Rogue One in 2016. Star Wars is this feeling that connects with something inside of us we don't fully understand, going even to the Force stuff we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the dance is a very aggressive, loud stomp and aggressive and raw and very explicit. And other times it's a waltz. It's graceful and it's beautiful and you got to be drawn in by all of it. And that's quite frankly a lot of pressure in Star Wars.
It really is. I think that, yeah, there's so many ingredients in Star Wars, and the choice of which ones do you just, I'm going to load this dish up with this spice is a big choice. I was talking about the Revenge of the Sith as an example of something that, at least to me in 2005, was explicit, but I'm kind of fascinated also that I think there are times when Star Wars is trying to have a lighter touch and the world kind of takes that away from Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like The Force Awakens is often can be seen as downplaying the political, right? Like they definitely didn't want to have any scenes where they talked about the politics, right? But it does code the Empire as the Nazi horror of the 1930s and 40s and ask a question, you know, what if no one was willing to accept that that exact horror is rising again? Like Force Awakens isn't an overtly political film, but that the young dictator of Hux picking up the dogma of the previous generations, you know, and shouting it, and then having, you know, these stormtroopers answer with a raised fist, you know, that stuff's all can be looked at as like, that's totally evergreen. That's about the, it's Star Wars talking about authoritarianism and the risk of the problems of one generation returning, right? But it ends up being very reflective of what is actually happening right now, you know?
Yeah.
When it was made, I think it was kind of like, what if this kind of happened? And then we are seeing an explicit rise across the globe of, you know, early to mid 20th century style authoritarianism, explicit anti-Semitism on the rise, right? With people marching and shouting directly anti-Semitic statements. So even Force Awakens, that I think was kind of trying to be, you're slightly more cozy. Star Wars is back. We aren't going to have anybody floating in a pod talking about taxes. We're not going to use much CGI. It's going to be original trilogy. Even then, it's so in touch with the cycles of evergreen problems that the world is almost made Force Awakens more overtly political.
It's especially the passage of time that we're already so far out of that film, right? It's crazy to think a film that was written and conceived and shot in like 2012, 2013, 2014. It's so right. It's so funny, you know, because quote politics, you know, quote unquote are boring, right? Like we don't want no tax roots and how important some of the politics of the prequels are now. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think the politics sing out whether we're listening or not. It's there in all the stories. And it becomes of the time, and that's why Star Wars, you know, sometimes we keep using the term evergreen, but has to pull back a little bit, you know, a little bit, because it's addressing the cycle. I'm fascinated by it, and that's why I'm fascinated by 7, 8, and 9, and what it was trying to say, and what it is doing, the generational stuff, how the legends affect the new generations and the old generations, and the rise of the same kind of evil. I just stumbled onto a video about Tolkien's kind of lost Lord of the Rings sequel that was in some letters and stuff. This is about 71, 72, and it was 100 years after, and it was the return, not necessarily of Sauron, but his return of the same kind of evil. And there's the character trying to figure out, is it this feel? I was there. My father was a Citadel guard. this feels like the evil of old and I need to find out. So he goes and meets a character. I'm starting to get into specifics. And he goes, oh, yes, this is the same evil. But it's not necessarily Sauron returning. It's the same cycle of evil. And right. Tolkien doesn't write it, one, because he says that's kind of a bummer, and two, he dies.
Which is also a bummer.
Also a bummer. And again, that's very general. Tolkien lore heads, please be nice, because I've run against some of you here lately. It's a little rough. But I was listening to this video, and this person that made a video then took a swipe at the prequel or at the sequels in the Lord of the Rings video. And I was just like, hey, now. It's important because if Tolkien at least realized if evil left unchecked will either remain or return, that's like some of the stuff he was literally explicitly saying in this piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Star Wars, to me, you could look at the Disney of it all. You could look at the IP. You could look at the stocks. But Disney and now Lucasfilm got a chance to continue the story and wake up on the morning after Endor and go, what do we do? And how do we tell this story? And I think this is one of the, it was blessed with this opportunity to teach us about the cycles of evil repeating if we're not careful. I think it's very important. And I think it's in the mind of a lot of the Star Wars creators now, the books, the comics, they deal with this. And you got High Republic going back to another era, you know, and looking at it too. Anyways, sorry. Sorry, Tolkien heads.
No, I mean, I really agree with you. I think that that there's this fascinating thing that by continuing the stories of fantasy characters, they inevitably become a little bit more real and are a little bit more talking directly about real life because there isn't the happily ever after. And I know some people want it and like it. And for some people, Return of the Jedi ends and then, you know, Luke and Han and Leia all have kids and they throw parties and it's great. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way.
Right, right.
And same thing with Lord of the Rings. If people are like, yeah, Sauron's defeated and then, you know, everybody's got a nice time. And they're like, look, Hobbit parties forever. Great. But the reality of life is problems reoccur. You go through other challenges. And by choosing to tell more stories, I think you really wrestle with that. And I think that's what was so smart about the sequels of it isn't just like, who's the big bad? Who's the problem this time? It's that, what if that dogma, what if that need for power, what if the idea that authoritarianism in rigid control, what if that reoccurred? And people didn't want to believe it because now it seems cartoonish, right? The Empire's been gone forever. What do you mean this little fan club in one side of the galaxy? They're not a problem, are they? They don't really believe that. They won't really do what Palpatine did, right?
Yeah.
That suddenly becomes a very interesting, vital story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it begins with, you know, in our own world, in the punchy world of Raise a Mary Sue. I didn't like Rose Tico, but I didn't like what happened to Kelly Marie Tran as if one opinion's needed to combine with the other. And then it goes into people just straight out selling lies that Kenobi is a show trying to replace white men. You could see the lessons in the playing out in the fandom.
Yeah.
And if you didn't believe it then, it's tough to fight now.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there not that there aren't a lot of rough opinions in the fandom, but I am also very aware that people in a very Palpatine-like way who are not fans try to use the fandom to their benefit, to see progress, to see diversity, to see change, to see inclusion, and know that this is a way that they can try to stir hate. And we all know which characters in Star Wars do that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Sorry if I got too real. It's just, it's all factors into it. It all factors into it.
I think
Star Wars needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think by the fact that we're taking a long time to answer this question is in a way in answer of like, I love Star Wars for the pulp adventure. I love it for the escapism. I love after a hard day to you know, just play some Star Wars Lego and have some fun, silly time in this fantastic, bizarre world. I think it can be escapism. But to me, that's about I'm choosing to engage with it that way. I don't think that it is escapism to come back to ultimately answering Adam's question. I think it can absolutely be used and enjoyed as escapism, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think baked into it is that Lucas from the beginning meant it to be didactic. It is a text that is meant to teach. It is weird to use this about something as entertaining as Star Wars, but I think Star Wars is edutainment.
You and I would not be talking about the 7 years in with Jennifer if it didn't have great continued value for our life, teach us more about ourselves. I've grown so much in the last couple years, and a lot of it comes from our discussions on Star Wars. I've grown and changed, you know? Which is hard for some folks. And it's so funny because a lot of those folks who aren't hanging with me anymore are still the ones who are like, but why do they have to be the first? Were they stormtroopers? and I'll say this. I don't think Star Wars ever was just escapism. I don't think it ever was. Taken by that for a long time, as with a lot of other properties. Including Lord of the Rings, including Star Trek and all that stuff.
You know, and I think if you watch THX 1138 and go, wow, and see that a lot of the ideas of the Empire are there, and that Lucas clearly has a passion to say, he really is aware of, you know, rigid authoritarianism, right? And then decides to, I'm going to pass on some of those same concerns and some ideas about how to respond to that with family, with empathy, with bravery, with hope. And I'm going to put it in this package that's fun to watch so people will see it, because THX 1138 is a great film. That's a mega bummer. And cold and distant, because that's what's being shown, is like authoritarianism is going to make everything cold and distant, but it's potentially a cold and distant film. So Lucas comes along and says, I want to still deal with these same ideas, but I want to put them in a warm, fun package, and Star Wars will forever be in this tension between how fun it is and how much it is meant to convey deep ideas.
Not to get specifics, but it's like I got some jokes in my set right now that I have to pull back and remember I got to make people laugh as well. And I look at THX 1138 and then to American Graffiti, based on this wonderful challenge of Coppola, because there's still some coming of age, powerful themes in that one. And then put it all together to go, how can I read? Not that George is like, I want to have a multi-billion-dollar empire. Ironic use of that term, of course. But like, George wasn't doing that. But I do really agree. He was like, well, that's not going to get a lot of people who listening that I want to hear this. So I got to find a different way. And what about the things that influenced me, the serials of my day?
Yeah, exactly. I think that you did a good job of answering Adam's question. And then we talked about a lot of other things. So I'll try to come to a conclusion for myself to directly answer Adam's question about, should it remain a parable for our time? I think that the ideas of Star Wars are evergreen, and sometimes they're going to end up being explicitly related to things that are going on right now, or a new Star Wars story could even be written as an explicit, metaphor or parable about something that's going on right now. I think the big thing to me is each project should decide what is the most effective way of getting our message across. Mm-hmm. If we embrace Star Wars, that it is meant to convey messages about how to be the best person in the world, how to handle certain problems, what kind of threats to look out for in the world. If you're trying to get any of that kind of message across, with Obi-Wan Kenobi, how to get past your failure and step toward the future, all those things, whatever the message is, I think the question should always be, what is the best way for the story to get it across so people truly see it and feel it, and it has a chance of making a difference in their lives? That's the biggest thing to me, is how do we tell the story so people feel the themes, that not just they can write them down, in an essay, but they feel them in their souls to the point that it makes a difference in their lives.
Absolutely. All they have to do is dance.
All they have to do is dance. As always, Ken can take complex ideas and make a phenomenal t-shirt idea. Star Wars. All you got to do is dance.
Well said.
All right.
Well said.
Thank you, Adam, for the great question. Well said to you as well. We're going to wrap up with, our agenda on Force Center, which is to encourage positivity, to encourage the happiness and hope and great meaning that can come from Star Wars, which we do with our Power of the Light Side segment. We ask patrons to send in something that has been joyful in Star Wars to them. So we're going to share this entry in Powered Light Side from Tim Langle. Tim says, as a parent, I love sharing my interests with my children. I love to see their eyes roll as I embarrass them with my unabashed joy and love for silly things. But what I have loved the most is seeing them latch onto their own silly loves and interests and sharing them with me. For years and years, I was the only Star Wars fan in our home while my wife and sons shared a love of Lego and puzzles and Pokemon. And I love sharing in those with them. Over the last 2 years, however, my oldest son and then my youngest son began latching onto Star Wars on their own. It started with Blips and then Forces of Destiny and then the sheer explosion of joy when they discovered the Lego Star Wars Freemakers and Specials. I probably would not have watched any of these on my own, but now that my children wanted to share them with me, it's difficult to not love them all. There are so many pathways and nooks and spaces in Star Wars for people to find their own kind of joy. It truly is the best. That is great. Ken, do you have any thoughts on the journey of children into Star Wars?
It's not something I've experienced firsthand. I've tried to get Chihuahuas to watch Star Wars. No luck there. But no, I love hearing it. It's such an interesting, it's, dare I say, a modern problem. Modern problem meaning the last 30, 40 years, because my dad did not have to worry about whether I'd like, F Troop or something. You know, like, different times, and we are in this from the 80s on, well, 70s obviously stars, but like pop culture is our art. It's how we mm-hmm. it's how we look at the world, and we are now in the spot where it's not just a movie you like, it's something you believe in, it's something you're inspired by. And when you have children or anyone close to your life, I don't need my partner to love everything that I love, but you know, the fact that we can sit down and enjoy Star Wars together means the world to me. Because Star Wars is so much to me. So yeah, I really love this story. I'm pals with Jennifer Murrow, Force of Destiny. Nicole Dubuque, right? Who wrote the like later seasons Force of Destiny. I say to Jen all the time, because sometimes she gets a little down on sometimes the reaction to that series and everything. I say, there's so many times I hear that things like that or the blips introduce Star Wars to a new generation, the youngest of generations. It's really powerful. Mm-hmm. It's all part of it. And so, Tim, I appreciate that as well.
Yeah, no, I love Forces of Destiny, both fabulous writers and people. I love the Star Wars Freemakers show. That one was particularly great and really opened me up to be like, yeah, I can enjoy this from lots of different perspectives. And I love the story that Tim is telling of kind of that, like, that great hope that they will find their way. And what a beautiful thing that the kids just found their own entrance into Star Wars. And then, you know, everyone could absolutely share it together is really great. I'm kind of I'm having that the opposite generational thing of my dad took me to Star Wars and has kind of a fond memory of taking me to the Star Wars. He liked Han Solo because Han Solo said cool things, and that was about it. Then my dad was like, and I'm tapped out. And someday soon here I'm going to be able to get him to sit down and watch The Mandalorian, and that's going to be the entryway to him because he's a Westerns guy. And he's going to recognize, he's going to turn to me after the first episode like, he's like the man with no name. And that's going to be the path back into talking about Star Wars with my dad. So really, really appreciate it, Tim. Thank you very much. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, great stuff, Tim. I love that. Keep sharing that joy. Keep experiencing it.
All right. Well, this was a supersized episode of Questions of the Force because we just happened to pull this week a lot of big ones. So, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Next week, what's our favorite color lightsaber? That's it. It's the only question. All right.
Four times in a row.
We are the Force Center podcast feed. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Merch available. But tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, and you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Don't forget to follow Jennifer Landa on TikTok and also on Twitter at Jennifer Landa. Or actually, she's got what is it? It's Jen Landa and then Jen1138. You all know. Just search on TikTok. I'm still trying to figure out TikTok. Speaking of generational change, you can follow me at Cadnapsock on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok, where occasionally I'll do a silly video with an Ewok. Or you can follow go to my website at cadnapsock.com. Joseph, where can they go for all of your TikTok adventures?
Well, first they can find me watching your TikTok. They're all good, but that Ewok one, that's real nice. Real nice. There's some good surprises in that one. Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, all under the handle at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and that's about it right now for the most part. And you can also find all of my other adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. In particular, I have a short film in the Lovecraft Film Festival, and if you happen to be in Rhode Island this weekend, at the Necronomicon Festival as well. So information on that will be up on my website soon, josephscrimshaw.com. Thank you all so much for the questions. Thank you, Tim, for the power of the light side. Thank you, Adam, Lightspeed, just using your first name, not full Lightspeed Bear. Matt. And of course, Ray, thank you all for the questions. For myself, for Ken, for Mando and his speech patterns, this has been Questions of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at Aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.